Nope. I cannot hear you, unfortunately. I will preemptively await your hearage. Maybe it's you have the right microphone, perhaps, or maybe it's on my end, perhaps? Hold on. Oh, this. Say something now.
Hello.
Ah, there we go.
Hi.
This thing is a monster. I have a very hard time keeping track of all the knobs and dials.
No worries.
All right. I think we're good. We're set. Everything is recording pristine. Fantastic. All right. Ladies and germs, welcome back. Today, I have a very, very exciting episode for you all. We're talking with a real developer, in the flesh, no less. We're talking to a real human being who has worked on a game that I have covered in the recent years. We finally got there. Please welcome to the stage none other than. How do you pronounce it?
Turcato.
That was such a bad. Is
Hi, I'm
it
Turcato.
Torquedo? I was always wondering, is it Torcado, Torquedo? You know, I was kind of debating. Torquedo! How are you doing?
Good, how are you?
I am doing my best. I'm working on a bunch of different things. You know, university life, you know how it is. But we're finally here. We have a guest. And just a quick introduction to you. What is it we're talking about today?
I'm a game developer. I've been a game developer for many, many years, since I was like maybe 12. I made a game called Window Kill. It's probably my most notorious game. And I think we'll be talking about that today. But yeah.
Fantastic. Round of applause, everybody. Yeah. All right. So, I've covered this game previously, and I think it was a couple weeks ago, where I was just discovering the basics, the fundamentals. I was only discovering the pinnacle. I also covered this game, I think it was exactly a year ago, comparatively to now, where I forced all of my co-hosts at the time to play this game,
That's awesome.
which was very fun. One of them loved it. They loved the concept. The other one was a bit of a rager, you know how it is. Yeah, this game can bring out the best and the worst in everybody that I've given
For
it to.
sure.
But in your own words, what would you describe Window Kill to be? What does it facilitate? What aspects, core fundamental aspects, were you kind of going for when you were making this game?
Yeah, I mean, so the like two sentence summary I gave on Steam is it's a twin stick shooter where the game plays through windows on your desktop. But the core of the game was just that. So originally it was made for a game jam. It was a game jam that required you to make a game from scratch in 2 days. And the theme was limited space, I think. So in my head, the core of it was just I wanted to make a game where I thought it would be cool if the windows on your screen moved around and shrunk and whatever. And the actual gameplay itself was kind of secondary to that, but I found that this twin stick shooter shooting enemies as they come into screen facilitated that idea really well.
I agree. I completely agree. The first time I saw the demo art for this, like the specific like splash screen for this game, I was like, it's not actually like that, right? And then I played it and I was like, holy, this is like very, very well made. You made this game specifically with the Godot engine, and it's the one engine that I also use primarily when I'm making my own
Nice.
games. But can you speak to on like the fundamental thematic underpinnings of the game? Like, a lot of people describe this game as quote unquote web core. Is that something that you kind of like realized in the moment? Like, oh, this game is like very web core-esque. Like it
That's
has
interesting.
that very like 90s aesthetic to it. Or is it just something that came up subconsciously in the community that you when you created
I
this
think
game?
it's been mostly subconscious, but definitely there are parts of it that I've intended for, like specifically the smiley boss. That is a direct reference to an old virus called You Are an Idiot, which was, if you don't know about it, is this like website where you go to the website and then it just flashes this face on your screen, the same like smiley face, but a slightly redesigned, and then it like moves windows around. And so there was a direct reference there. There's also a reference to this old, I don't know what it's called. It's like Desktop Destroyer or something. It's like from like 2005 or something. It's really a lot of application where you can just like hammer and scratch your screen and blowtorch on your screen and all of that. So I implemented an idea like that for this secret boss in the game, where it like the boss will smash on your screen and you can see like actual cracks covering like your windows and stuff. So there are
Oh
references
wow.
there, but otherwise it's the other aspects are mostly subconscious.
Now the interesting thing is this boss you're talking about is so hidden. I've never discovered it in all my gameplay yet. Like I've played this game at least for the past in the past week I've been playing it at least like 10 hours, right? And I've never encountered this boss once.
Nice. Well, I apologize for spoiling. I tend not to spoil games because my favorite part of games in general, both making and playing, is secrets.
Oh, absolutely,
So,
yeah.
but yeah, I mean, it's been out long enough that I felt like probably most people know about it. But yeah, there's a secret boss. I won't talk about how to get it. Maybe you can look it up or find it yourself. But actually, the secret boss existed in the very original Game Jam version and might have been a mistake. It took like it forced me to spend like an extra like day to implement this one thing, and I don't think anyone in the duration of the jam the jam is a competition where people can vote and rate on the game, and then there's winners picked after like 3 weeks. And I think in the duration of those 3 weeks, no one even discovered it. So I think it was a mistake to add it in, but I still really enjoyed putting that in.
That is wild to me. Now, you spent like 50% of the time working on this game jam, just working on this one specific boss that only a few people will ever
Yeah.
see, which I think is just such dedication to the craft. You're like, I have this fantastic idea here, but you know what it needs? A
Yeah.
very hidden boss that
Exactly.
completely
I don't know. I really find
has a
that
meta
funny.
reference. It's
For a lot of game
beautiful.
jams, I really enjoy this idea of like hidden, I don't know. I guess secrets is the best way to put it. But there's this one game I played for a game jam where I don't know if you've heard of this game. I think it's called Columns. It's an old Sega Genesis game.
I've
It's
not.
basically like Tetris, but or like Bejeweled, I don't know, something like that. But this game jam recreated that game, but it had a twist where the edges of the screen were actually their own tiles and they could be cleared. And if you clear them, then you can drop pieces down into this like tunnel, and then the game completely changes into this like adventure game where instead of you dropping Tetris pieces down, you're actually traversing with your Tetris pieces down this corridor, trying to dodge and beat enemies. And I thought that idea was so
Oh,
cool,
wow.
especially because there's a chance that people playing the game would never even discover this part of the game. Like to me, that was the entire game, and the first part was just like a facade. And I love the idea of this facade being the only thing that most people experience. I don't know why, but I think it's interesting.
That's the thing, though. Your game specifically is such a good facade. You're already wowing them with this one specific concept, and then you go one step deeper, and you're like, now window manipulation.
Exactly,
Now the boss is breaking your screen, is trying to grab at you. I love it. So, you're talking about specifically, this was the Ludum Dare jam,
That's
right?
right.
So you only had 2 days to complete it over the weekend. But before that, what specifically got you started with making games, right? Do you I've seen on your webs on your itch.io page, you have a whole library of different projects, games, etc. that you've worked on and continue to work on, is that if I'm not mistaken.
Oh,
But
definitely. I
specifically,
mean, making games is my favorite thing to do. I've done it since I was a kid. I don't know what exactly brought me onto this idea, but like my earliest memories I can think of, I want to make games, and so I just pursued that. And my intention wasn't to pursue that as like a job, but I just pursued it because it interested me, and it has carried me through to today. It's just been a perpetual thing. But so I think my earliest memories, like I never watched TV, I never watched movies, but what I did do is I played really old Flash games online. That's what I spent most of my time doing, like Kongregate and Addicting Games and all those sites. And I've really loved spending my time. I also played indie games like Cave Story. I referenced that one a lot when people asked me what got me into games. So games like that, I think I play those games and I realized, oh, I could do something like this. And then I just started putting my intention into seeing if I can make silly things. I started playing around with Scratch really early on. I made some really bad platformer games.
Same. Oh man. Yeah, I feel like Scratch and like a lot of these newer, I'm assuming you were like older than me, that I was born in the early I was born in 2005. So okay. A lot of the things that you're talking about are just things that I kind of just grew up with as like even a child. Like I grew up playing like cool math games on the computer lab, trying not to get caught and stuff like that. Or like playing like these old MMO online games like Club Penguin and stuff like that. These games like kind of conceptualized my worldview of video games for so long. Yeah. And then Scratch was the door that kind of opened for me. And I saw like the full expanse of what I could do with like the knowledge that a computer could do, right? With coding and stuff like that. Like that's the thing that I think that empowers most kids and most teens and even most like adults to actually start coding.
Yeah, I mean, so yeah, I started Scratch. I also played with Cool Math Games. It's a classic one. I specifically wanted to mention Cool Math Games is still running, and they're one of the few like web portals that are super like developer friendly. Which is to say there's a ton of like game portals where they just rip games and put them on their site and whatever, but Cool Math Games are still running, and they've contacted me and given me several licensing deals that are like way above anyone else that has approached me. Really? To put games, like they've put Auto Ball, which is one of my games, and Spicy, I think, maybe a different one, but two of my games they put on their site. So I just wanted to shout out Cool Math Games, because they're awesome. And I definitely grew up playing on that site. But yeah, I've also played with like Club Penguin and all that. And yeah, also relating to Scratch, when I started improving my skills with Scratch, and I wanted to move on to a bigger engine, I found an engine called Stencil, which was built kind of in the vein of Scratch, where it had drag and drop programming. And that was the engine that I used for many, many years. Most of my time developing games has been with Stencil. And I really think that kind of introduction, like drag and drop programming or whatever, any way to get kids to make it easier for them to get into this programming is really cool. So I really appreciate Scratch and Stencil.
Yeah, they give you like a very nice UI too. It's not intimidating. It's not anything like you're gonna be bug fixing for the next, like, you know. It's a very user friendly experience for them. Now, granted, eventually when you're moving from one game engine to the next, like, you know, you have Stencil, and then you move on to Godot. Yep. Or was there anything in between from you moving to Godot? What kind of pushed you to move into this whole new engine, knowing absolutely nothing about, like, the actual...
It's an interesting process. I think for the most part... So with Stencil, as I got proficient, half of me realized... that part of the engine is kind of holding me back because I'm doing things that's not intending. But the other half of me realized I can extend past the bounds of the engine and still work in it. Like with my last remaining like months and years of Stencil, what I was actually doing was just modifying the engine itself. I was extending the engine to facilitate my needs. Like I was doing funny Windows stuff with Stencil even. I made a Windows billiards game where you drag the edges of windows and it as like a pool cue and it snaps them and all the windows bounce into,
I love
into
that
each
idea.
Other. Yeah, so I made that in Stencil, which is an engine that doesn't even have like Windows support necessarily. It doesn't have a way to spawn Windows. I just hooked into like native Windows API processes because it had that possibility. So potentially I could have stuck with Stencil for even till today if I just worked around things, and probably would have evolved is me just like shifting out the stencily parts of Stencil and hooking into just like the underlying technology. Like it's built on a language called Hax, whatever. So yeah, transferring into Godot, I think my decision was mostly I want to have something that had better support for these things I want to do, but is also open source. The biggest reason why I chose Godot specifically is because it's open source, and especially with Windowkill, I could not have made Windowkill if I wasn't able to hook into the engine and modify things. I've done a ton of modifications to the engine itself to facilitate all this Windows stuff.
Ah, I see. So you're not using the engine as it's given. You're tweaking the specifics to facilitate the actual game that you're making itself.
Yeah, for sure. And Windowkill was pretty much the first project I tried with Godot. I did some tests earlier, but it was definitely my first Ludum Dare with Godot. And so I was digging into the engine even with the 2 day time constraint, but it worked out well.
Working on the clock. That's the one thing about game jams. I tried to do one back in the day, and I'm just not good under pressure, especially when I'm just like starting to learn the engine itself.
Oh, for sure. It's hard and it takes practice too. I mean, I've done, I don't know, maybe 30 or 40 game jams by now. I would not expect people to be able to manage themselves that well in the first few, but it's the thing I recommend to most people when they say, when they ask me, how do I get good at game development or whatever, I say, make really small games or do game jams, because the more you do game jams, the better you improve the skill of finishing games, which is something that a lot of game developers have trouble with.
Absolutely. But you just, I don't know where to find the time. It's just, it's so hard out here. As a game developer myself, I simply don't have the time.
For sure. I mean, I do think games are one of the most time-consuming skills or hobbies, just because of how many different fields that are required to contribute to whatever you're working on.
Exactly. It's not just labels and germs, not at home. It's not just programming. No. You gotta work on the user interface. You gotta work on the audio. Is it actually polished? The actual game design portion is actually what kind of keeps up a lot of your time. Would you agree?
Yeah, I mean, I especially in the game jam, I usually spend at least the first day just thinking of an idea before I even start programming. Maybe it's days too long, but definitely so several hours I spend thinking and not touching the computer at all before I start.
That is, yeah. I usually have the trouble of like me jumping in right away, and I realize I don't have like a fully fleshed out concept.
Yeah.
And then I kind of look at the walls, and I'm like, I built the box too small. I need to go
Yeah.
back to the drawing board.
It's easy to paint
So,
yourself into a corner, but that
exactly.
again, it's a skill you build up is having a full vision of what you're working on and then being able to continue from there.
Oh man, I also just a quick side tangent. Ludum Dare apparently, I believe. Had like a bit of I was gonna plan to join the most recent one, but I believe there was a little bit of a unfortunate mishap with the funding behind it. Is that a thing that
Yeah,
actually?
so the main runner, Mike Kaspersek, he's been running the Ludum Dare for many, many years. And then a couple months ago, he announced that he would be putting it on hold for this year to focus on other things. Since that, there has been a reception of people contributing to his Patreon and donating. And he has since made a message saying that he will actually be putting on the next Ludum Dare at the usual time. So news may change again, but as far as I know, it will still happen in a couple months, I think. I don't remember
That's
exactly when.
fantastic. I'm pumped because this the for the people at home, this is not just like a run-of-the-mill game jam. This is something that's been going on since like 2002, I believe.
Yes,
This is
very
a
long. I'm glad you know about it too.
yeah.
I try to do it every single time that it happens. I have a running streak of like 30, I think, or something. It's the like one. Like cornerstone of my game development stuff is just doing the Ludum Dare every time it happens. I try to make time for it every time.
I don't have 30 of anything. That's crazy. Oh, wow. I mean, that's the thing. This game jam specifically is symbolic a lot in the indie development community. Like a bunch of games came out of this game, like including yours. Like there's Window Kill, there's Inscription, there's even like Hollow Knight was inspired by the first development of a Ludum Dare project that didn't have enough time to complete,
You know
right?
what's really interesting with Hollow Knight is the original version of Hollow Knight was actually made in Stencil.
Get out. That's crazy.
Stencil is a very not well-known engine, and yeah, Hollow Knight was originally made in, and then they switched to Unity, but
That's the thing. I mean, I don't think Godot was really that well known until the whole Appaloosa
yeah,
with
that
Unity.
definitely pushed it into the limelight for sure.
Well, I believe. Okay, so limited space. That was the theme you had to kind of work with, right? So, was there any ideas beforehand? Like you were talking about how you have a couple hours before you actually start working on it. Was there ideas you had beforehand before you were working on this project, or did you just say, "I have this concept I had with the window billiard balls," and I was like, "I want to see that through," you know? Well, which one was it?
I
say.
mean, for every Lune Bear, I pretty much only start thinking of ideas once the theme is announced. I very, very rarely have a preconceived notion of what I want to make before the game starts, or before the jam starts. I maybe that's just part of what motivates me, but I do think it, in a way, leads to better ideas because I can better, like, generate thematically relevant games that way. But with Whimsical, yeah, it was an idea that I came up with after the theme was announced. With limited space, I mean, with every jam, I try to think of really unique ideas. I always try to make something that I haven't seen before. And so, with limited space, I don't know what exactly brought me there, but at some point, I considered windows shrinking, and I thought it fit well, and I wanted to make something that highlighted
That, I mean, you did
that.
it, to be fair. I believe then, like, what, how, apologies for my ignorant question here, but how do you come up with ideas then?
I
Is
mean,
it just something like that you just fill in the void with, or do you just like, idea?
well, like I said, it's another skill that you can build with practice. I really, really enjoy exploring interesting ideas through games. I love playing games exclusively because I enjoy seeing what kinds of ideas people come up with. I love making games because I love thinking of really funny mechanics and all of that. I have a GDC talk where I've given a lot of tips on my process on how to come up with unique ideas. But so I mean, there's several different strategies you could use to come up with ideas, but a lot of them revolve around like thinking of something and then just twisting it, or thinking of something and adding something, or taking away something they think is fundamental. Like I used Mario as an example in the GDC talk for a lot of examples. But with Mario, if you just have a platformer where you move right and left and jump, you could twist it to something interesting by just taking away something fundamental. Like you can't move left. Now there's a whole game idea where you try to design platforming around not being able to move left. There's a bunch of consequences of that that wouldn't result from anything, or not being able to jump, or I don't know, or adding something onto it. Like you can make Mario grow if you press the button instead of it walking, whatever. So I don't
I
know. Strategies
see.
like that help.
Like, just concepts. Like, I feel like restrictions are probably the best way to come up with ideas then. Because, like, if you have like a full palette you can work with, you have the whole stencil of colors with you, you're like, I don't know what to do with this. I had this, it's way too broad, right? So I think by what you're saying is basically just like reducing that palette by taking away colors, taking away specific mechanics that are intrinsic to either the genre you're making or the specific idea that you originally came up with. Like, how can I twist this?
Yeah,
Exactly.
for sure. Restrictions are, yeah, I mean, even with like pixel art, just restricting the color palette is a way for people to show creativity in how to present colors.
I think there was like a two color game jam that I was thinking of joining, but I was like, I don't even know where I'm starting with this. This is like too much of a restriction.
That's really
I
funny.
could.
The first game on my itch page is actually a game for a game jam where it's not just two colors, but it's the entire screen can only be one pixel of two colors.
I believe I saw that. It was the one bit hunt, wasn't it? Or was it something else?
It's Bitfinder. The first one
Bitfinder.
is this pink square. I think it's the worst game on my itch page, but I thought it was an interesting game jam idea because it's very restrictive.
Would you
And
say
there's a
that?
lot of. Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Would you say that, like, sometimes you add restrictions that are a little bit too much? Like, sometimes when you add too much restrictions, like, now Mario can't move left, now he grows, and now also the floor is completely lava, so you have to continuously skip while you're going
Well,
across. Is that, like, too much, or can you still make that work?
you can phrase that kind of idea as something other than restricting. Like, if you're adding, like, the floor is lava, then you could view that as not a restriction, but something you're adding. But either way, I do think that there's a limit, of course, to how much you can restrict an idea or how many ideas you can add. A very common issue that game developers come across is scope creep, where they add too many ideas and now they can't possibly c combine all of them in a timely manner before they give up on the project or whatever. So definitely there's a spectrum of how much you can add or remove to a game idea before it falls apart.
Absolutely, yeah. I think there was a few times I remember specifically I was making like a tower defense game, and I was like, now this tower does this specific thing only when this happens. I believe the theme in this game gen I was working on was called malfunction. So I was having the idea of like the towers that you're placing down can lose power, and once they power off, they have a specific trigger that does like a insanely powerful effect, and then the robot, the tower switches off, right? But I was thinking, like, how can the player be able to memorize all these things? You think that's something that's like important? Do you think that the player should be able to learn as you're going along, or do you think that the concept should be kind of building up as you go along? Like, say you like unlock things slowly but surely, kind of like what you do in your game.
That's interesting. Either way, I tend to, with my games, have no written tutorials, and so my design facilitates this kind of learning by testing or by trial rather than the game explaining it to you. I do think that is to a fault maybe in some cases, but in general, I think I prefer playing those games, and so I think I prefer making those games as well. So in that case, I think I would at the very least make one tower a focus for a level or something like that, so that the player can fundamentally understand all of the consequences and the actions of this tower and how it relates to everything else in the game, and then build on that once they've shown that they understand this one mechanic.
That makes sense. Yeah. It's like it's a trial by fire. You got to make sure they learn the concept, then you can move on to a more complex concept. You keep layering it. The gameplay loop continues to get more complex as you play the game. So, I believe it's time for our intermission. Now, let me just I don't I never it's a running it in bit with myself. I never have the music ready. Every single time. It's like me trying to figure out how to get the music set up is trial by fire, I'll tell you that much. Let me see real quick. Boop. Maybe. I think this is it. Here we go. And into the authentication code. Are you kidding me?
Always something.
There's always something. A 6-digit code at my email. What fun. Well, while we're doing this, one sec. Let's just quickly go before we head into the quick interlude into the music. We can talk about how you onboarded your specific music artist.
Yeah, Keystack, the person who made the music for the game, he's a friend that I've known for a long time, sort of through similar circles, and I just messaged him, I think on Twitter at some point, saying, "Hey, would you like to make music for this game I'm working on?" And the game at the time was Hectech, which was my first like large title,
Cool, I've seen that, yeah.
and so I've known him from that, and I've asked him to make music for other things since that and Winnicula, and then for Winnicula, like, of course I want to ask Keystack because he's a genius and he makes amazing music.
Absolutely. Like that breakcore track at the start immediately got me
It's
grooving.
perfect. It's so good.
Fantastic. Well, we'll be playing that right now. I believe that should go through your speakers, so if you want to mute me, you may. We'll be having
Nice.
a quick intermission. If I can find it. And this is it, I believe. Here we go. If you want to check out his music, Keystack, it's all on Spotify. You can listen to it. We're going to be going, which one would you prefer?
I think the original is great. I think that's a good one to start
Window
with.
killer it is.
Yep.
I shall see you all on the other side. Stick around. All right. Ladles and germs, did you like it? I hope you did. All right. Quickly talk to me about specifically what did you request anything specific from Keystack when you were getting him to do the soundtrack, or you're just like, you know what, just look at the game. What do you think? And he made the song.
For the most part, I usually don't give too much direction, but I think I gave I said like, yeah, do something. I don't know. I think he suggested maybe breakcore-ish, and I was like, yeah, I think that would fit perfectly. And it ended up with this. And I will say, even after the many, many months of development, I've listened to this song maybe like a million times. And even on the million first time, it's still great. I
It still
enjoy
hits
listening to
the
it.
exact same. I completely agree with you there. Normally, I'm not a fan of Window Breaker specifically. It gets me grooving in a way that
oh,
I've never.
So good.
When I unlocked that track most recently, I was like, this is the only song I'm going to be playing from now on.
Yeah, it's really good. All the songs are great.
So, when you were making the game, there's only one specific character type. There's when you're playing the game, there's like you can shoot enemies, and the way that you increase the border size is by shooting the borders.
Yep.
But there's only one character type in the demo when you're making it for the game jam. Did you have the idea of increasing the roster in mind when you were making it, or did you just like when you were slowly updating it, you're like, you know what, this needs more characters, so you just...
That's a good question. Yeah, the game jam came out, and it came out, and it was very well perceived. And I think immediately I was like, I need to make this bigger somehow. I think the logical conclusion I came to was more characters is something that fits the theme well, fits the game well. So yeah, I don't think I had any ideas for characters during the jam, but afterwards, I think that was the first idea. That and more bosses.
Absolutely. What was the first character that you created after the fact when you were done the game jam?
Oh, shoot. That's a good question. I think it might have been Bastion, but I don't... It was either Bastion or Nyx, which is the character with the star, like, circle-smacking thing. It's very hard to describe. But I think because I thought of the idea, and it felt so interesting to me, for some reason, I think that was the first idea I had. Yeah, now I'm remembering. I think Nyx was the first idea I had for a character. It was a weird, like... area of effect hitting character.
Yeah, I think I remember what you're talking about. I don't play that one too much. Bastion is usually my go-to. That's like, I'm just big old laser.
Very simple idea, very easy, and it's very fun. I mean, you're just shooting an instant shot laser at enemies.
That's fantastic. I do love his special ability. It's just so much fun.
Very satisfying.
But there was a few other characters too that I found were interesting. Meebo was one of them. I was like, this is like, you have like a little extra shield protection based on, you can use like your extra Meeboid body to protect yourself while you're trying to like avoid shots. Because that's the one thing that I do say is kind of like the hardest part about this game. You get to a point, like say the 50-minute mark, where you're like, there's just so much on the screen right now, I can't even like process what's going on, and then you're dead in like 5 seconds.
Yeah, for sure. Meebo was the last one that I've implemented. That was the most recent content update added Meebo, and I'm glad you brought it up because I think it's one of the most interesting designs, especially for that point with the kind of the meat shield component of the character. It definitely adds an interesting twist on the normal game loop with playing the character.
Exactly. I would say also because it's like, normally there's no reason for you not to stop holding the shoot button, right?
Yeah.
You just keep firing on. But like in this case, you press it off just to make sure that your Amoeboid body can regenerate itself, so you have more of a little buffer for you to protect. It's very
for sure.
Genius.
And I'm glad you picked up on that because the game, again, doesn't tell you this. It just drops you in. So
oh, no. I spent like at least 30 minutes into the run wondering why my Meeboids were not generating. I was like, oh, you have to wait.
Gotcha. Yep.
It's all trial by fire. Exactly what you said. I would say also when I was playing the demo at the start because I was broke, I didn't. I realized that the bosses specifically were extremely hard at the time. I was like, I can't. In the demo, I remember I could not get past the second boss, the Hydra, the big snake creature. I could not get it past it for the life of me. And then in this game, I picked it up for the first time. I was like, I finally got the shiny new copy, and I got through no problem. I was like, is that something that was kind of just apropos of you adding more stuff to the game, or was that just
kind of
intentional?
I think that was mostly accidental. I don't even remember like consciously deciding to make it easier or harder. I don't even remember it being that hard, so maybe...
Mammoth's bad. Mammoth is a bad gamer.
I mean, it's a very common trap for me, especially making game jam games, where because I'm the person who's put the most time into it, I fall under this idea that it's too easy because I've become proficient at my own game, but when I put it out and people play it, everyone says it's too hard, and it's I think the most common issue I run into with game jam games is it being too hard because I get used to playing it.
Absolutely. I think again, it's the same idea of game balance, right? That's probably like maybe not the most hardest or the most like monotonous part of the game. It's definitely the most challenging you have to put yourself in sort of the seat of the player saying, this is the first time I'm looking at this game. What needs to change in order to make it like more apparent as to what they're doing, especially in the way that you're teaching them?
Yeah, it's very hard because you can't just unremember mechanics or whatever. You have to somehow train your brain to empty out all preconceived notions of how something would happen or in
exactly.
the game or whatever.
You built this Frankenstein's monster. You have to make sure you can talk to it.
Exactly.
Oh, man. But talk to me specifically about bosses. We were talking about the smiley specifically being a kind of reference to an old virus that went around. For some reason, I had those two confused with the I love you virus. Those were the kind of two that were just kind of like circulating in my mind, the most apparent anyway, when I was growing up.
Yeah, that was around the same time, I think, those two viruses anyway. But yeah, that kind of thing. The first boss I added was the Spiker boss. I don't even think I gave it a name. Yeah, there was no unlock tab for the original Game Jam game, so I didn't have names for the bosses. I only had to think of that when adding the unlock menu. In the game, the boss is just called Boss 1, and all the enemies are just triangle, square. There's a running joke, actually, that the pink octagon enemy that sticks to the size of the screen is called a hexagon in the code, because I didn't a plan on the design for the enemy until after I made that, so that's actually hexagon, even though it's wrong.
But what is it actually called then? Is it just?
I mean, so only the enemies and bosses that have names in the unlocks are like, I guess, officially named. But I think the reason for that is because I like seeing what people come up with names. Like even the purple money doesn't have a name, but it's fun seeing what people come up with for names for those kinds of things.
Oh, it's an absolute treat. I think there would be a fantastic contest idea where like you donate all the money to charity, like you get like $5 to put into like a raffle, and you make up your own name for that specific. What is Hexagon?
That's really funny. That'd be fun. Yeah. but yeah. So, but the sorry, Spiker was the first boss I made. I don't know what brought me to that design. I was just thinking of, I don't know, a boss that shoots bullets that created a sort of bullet hell field, something interesting to dodge. And then the worm was the next boss I made. And that was one of my favorite moments developing the game throughout the development, was making that worm boss. Actually, I streamed the development of that boss. I only did like one live stream development for the game, but I made that boss on the stream. It was really, really fun. I love how it moves around.
Even with the windows as well, I was like, It's like going out of the windows. It's making own windows and unwrapping back around. It design wise, it just itches a specific niche that has never been really touched upon before, I'd say.
Yeah, and that boss specifically, it goes outside of your screen monitor, and so people with multiple monitors, that's the first time where they realize, like, particularly where they realize that these windows are just normal windows on their monitors, when the worm boss stretches on to a different monitor that they weren't even paying attention to. It's funny to watch streamers play and have that happen.
Oh, absolutely. There was a few other bosses too. What would you say in the more recent updates? I believe there's been four bosses that were added. There was the orbs. There's the slime. Yep. There's a few others that I can't recall at the moment.
those two. The Miasma was the most recent boss added.
Right.
It's this like virus effect boss. That one is really interesting in the same way that Meebo's design kind of twists the core loop of the game. Miasma's design kind of twists the game in a different way. And it's in a way that I don't think most people will realize, because again, it's not explained in the game. But how Miasma works is, when another boss spawns, if Miasma is still moving around on the screen and they come in contact with that boss, it infects the other boss. And when another boss is infected, what it does is it causes all of its two attacks to kill normal enemies. And when those enemies are killed, they don't drop coins. So there's this kind of double-edged sword of, if you have all of your bosses infected, it means enemies are way less
profitable.
Yes, the enemies don't drop money, but they're also less dangerous because they are killed by the other bosses. You don't have to kill them. So if you are limited by how much money you can make, then it's bad to have your bosses infected. But if you're taking a lot of damage, then it could be good to keep those bosses infected because the field will be cleared of enemies, and you don't only have to like pay attention to the bosses.
That's something I actually never noticed. I was like, why is there no enemies showing up? And it's just it's another one of those like game design choices that you don't really notice until you point it out to somebody. And I'm just having that realization right now. That's crazy.
Yeah, I think it's interesting in how it kind of affords the player their own choice by choosing which bosses to kill, because they could just choose to leave one of the bosses alive that's infected so that the infection can continue to spread, or they can choose to kill them all off if they want to continue building wealth.
That is another one of those little, it adds another little loop onto the main gameplay loop that makes the game a little bit more complicated. I like it. So,
Yeah, go ahead.
sorry, we're almost running out of time, but I'll let you finish your thought.
No, that was it. I mean, the only other boss I was going to talk about was the slime boss, which is pretty simple. It's just a boss that splits into several other bosses when you
Your
kill it.
iconic slime creature.
Yep.
Nothing quite like it. But let's quickly talk about before we wrap up here, some of the other projects you're working on. There was I think it was called like Switchblade, I believe. There was that one project that you were working on where you play as a Switchblade. If you wish to go a little bit more in depth in that.
One of the few games that I've worked on as a team of people. I usually just do solo work, but this one I did as a game jam with several friends of mine. And it was really fun. We made a game. The theme was You Are the Weapon. Oops, sorry. So we made a game where you start as I guess it's like a fork. We didn't really decide what the initial thing is, but you unlock different weapons. You unlock a sword weapon, you unlock a sniper or a gun. You can switch which mode your player plays as, and the challenge is just to explore the whole map and get to the top using these various abilities of these weapons.
Right, so you're using like recoil in order to move yourself and
Yeah.
traverse around the map, which I think is just a fascinating concept.
Yep.
What would you say, other than Window Kill, and besides your most recent project, what would you say is like your first like project that you're like, I made something. You can look at it and you're like, wow, this is actually something, and I could put it out and show people.
That's a good question. I think Heck Deck is a good example for that. It's my first like major project. It's the first game that I put as a price on itch.io and Steam. It was my first Steam game, I think. That might not be true, but I'm pretty sure, yeah, Heck Deck was my first Steam game. But yeah, that's a project that took a year and a half or so to make. It's a bullet hell card game, where all the bullets are cards and time only moves when you move. So you move on the screen, all the enemies shoot bullets in the forms of cards, and when you touch them, you take damage, but then you collect the card, then you can play it. So some cards have like a bullet you can shoot, or like a shield you can activate on yourself, or whatever.
I'll have to discover more of your catalog. That sounds very interesting. And
Thank you.
honestly, I believe that you know what? You're going places. I can already tell.
I hope so. I
No,
appreciate
I think that what you're doing in a lot of the space here is that this show is mainly designed to try to like upraise these like very small gems that I
it.
can just like see and hold. And your games like specifically aren't even that small. Like these games cover like hundreds of thousands of people's eyes. But like there's still like such a widespread audience that has no clue about these beautiful little gems that just exist under the surface. So I hope that whatever games you make in the future that maybe I'll get to interview again and
Yeah,
we'll be able
absolutely.
to discuss more about game development.
Yeah, and I really appreciate what you're doing. I love indie games. It's what I've surrounded my life with. I really love there's so many cool ideas, cool little games, like on itch especially, that basically no one knows about. You can just click on browse latest games on itch and you'll find something insane that you've never would have found if you just played the same, I don't know, whatever game you've played for a billion hours.
Exactly. That's what that audience, I'm talking to you now. Get off your Call of Duty and open itch. That's your homework, all right?
Exactly. Yeah.
It was a fantastic talk we had. If there's anything you would like to add, and anything you'd like to plug, please, the stage is yours.
Yeah, thanks a lot for having me on. It was really great. I really appreciate all of the time you're giving to indie games. I love indie games. If there's any call to action, it would just be to play more indie games, find really small developers and give their games a try. I'm constantly working on new stuff. I'm working on a secret project right now that I'm really excited about, but I can't really say more about it. but I guess keep an eye out for that.
I'll keep my eyes peeled, I'll tell you that much. And I hope the audience does too.
Yep, for sure.
All right. Well, that is the show. I hope everyone had a fantastic week. I hope everyone at home is sitting comfy in their little couches or wherever you're doing. Study for your exams. You only have like a week, please. Don't make the same mistake I did. Well, I hope that everyone has a fantastic day, and I'll see you next week. We have another show host guest on the setup. It's going to be a game called Venba. I'm talking to one of the composers for that, so stay tuned and have a great day. See you around.
Bye.